You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Frame. Mother's Day is almost here. What are you getting her? Something that shows you care. Something that makes her feel loved. Something that won't stress you out. Something like the Skylight Frame. The Skylight Frame is the perfect gift. It's a touchscreen photo frame your whole family can upload photos to, from wherever they are in the world. It's a way to share with her all the moments that matter. It sets up in seconds. You can even make sure that it's already loaded with photos when your mom opens her Mother's Day gift. And her Skylight Frame can hold thousands of the treasured photos you share. It's an easy, heartfelt way for mom to stay connected with those who matter most. It really is the perfect gift. Now, as a special Mother's Day offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight Frame when you go to skylightframe.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTFRAME.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightframe.com/easy.
While we are extremely proud of our episodes this month to celebrate Pride and highlight our parents in the LGBTQ+ community, we also know that there is a seismic shift in awareness and action taking place with regard to the Black Lives Matter movement here in our country, fighting for social justice in our world.
The episode you are about to listen to was recorded prior to the Black Lives Matter protests currently taking place. When you listen, please bear this in mind. We pledge our support to our Black brothers and sisters during this time and always. Please visit our Instagram page for resources to help you raise an anti-racist child. Change, for their future begins now. Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for tuning into this episode of Mama's Talkin' Loud. I'm Kara Cooper.
And I'm Jessica Rush. And today joining us is the global dance supervisor and associate choreographer for Hamilton, Stephanie Clemens, and her wife, NYPD officer and yoga instructor, Colleen Quinn. Hi, everybody. Welcome to this episode of Mama's Talkin' Loud. I'm Jessica Rush.
And I'm Kara Cooper. And today we have a couple with us. We have Stephanie Clemens. She is the associate choreographer and global dance supervisor for Hamilton. She was in the original companies of In the Heights and If Then, serving as a dance captain and the associate choreographer for Bring It On. Most recently, she is the co-choreographer of the upcoming Fly the musical that was seen at La Jolla Playhouse. And we have her wife with us as well. Colleen Quinn is a police officer, an NYPD police officer, and a yoga instructor. Thank you both so much for being here.
Welcome, ladies. I'm so excited to have y'all here. I think, obviously, I'm excited to talk about motherhood and all the things, but I have to say that when I found out, Colleen, that you were a police officer and yoga instructor, I was like, wait, what? So I can't wait to delve into all of it. Like, that was Same. The thing that I was like, oh my gosh. Like, it's one thing, because I knew that you were a police officer. And then when I discovered the yoga aspect, I was like, holy, all right. Well, I can't wait to hear.
Started, and she does. She's also an amateur comedian, and she is so good. I always say, when people are like, oh yeah, I'm like, you don't even know. She's got all, we're wearing all these hats, but.
Oh my God,
a Renaissance woman.
Seriously. And yes. I saw you can dance too. I saw on your Instagram that you've got moves. So you can put that on your resume as well.
Yep, every Sunday for our dance class. Got moves too.
Yes, ladies, thanks for being here. I just saw yesterday, I think, was the one that you posted. You're probably wearing Ramsey often. Ramsey is their son. And you were dancing with him in the carrier, leading the combo and making it happen in your living room, I think, or as we're doing these days.
Yeah. So every Sunday, starting at the, I think it was like week two of the quarantine, it might've been the first week. I don't know. He really likes to move to go to sleep. And so I know a lot of our dancer mommy babies are. So, I used to like wear him in my carrier. What happened was, is, you know, people started offering free dance classes and I would wear him cause I'm home. She's working all day and I would wear him. And I've noticed that every time I wore him, he went to sleep, like had a great nap. And so I was like, you know what? I'm going to teach a parents and me dance class where mommies or daddies want to wear their kids every Sunday. It will keep me dancing and creating and choreographing and moving. And Colleen will tell you a little bit more about what she does, but so we basically double stream it. We stream it on her NYPD Blue Karma yoga platform and mine. And we have all, like, we have like dancers that join us. We have police officers that join us. People come with their kids, they wear their dogs, they come with nothing, you know, and it's really fun. It's like an easy beginner class. And so we actually do it every single Sunday. And now that the quarantine's like changing, I don't know, I feel like we're like moving to a new tier. I don't know what to call this next phase. Yeah. But I'm like, do I keep doing it? And we're really, I don't know, we're really enjoying it. So I think we're going to keep doing it, maybe move it to a different day or something so that we can have our summer Sundays back. But yeah, so we've been doing it every week as a family.
That's awesome. Will you tell us about Ramsey? Will you tell us about your son?
Yeah. So he was born April of last year. So he's next week going to be 13 months. He's like a year and a couple weeks right now. He is hilarious. He's just one of those kids where I feel like he came out like knowing so much. Like we have this famous picture of when he was born and they put him, you know, he came on my chest and his face looks like an old man who just witnessed a horrific like, he already had like age in his face and something terrible just
like
happened.
He knew too much.
Like, and like, you know, they say like babies are like the reason why like their, you know, their neural development is like delayed, and also that they can like come through the canal like and not know what the heck just happened to them. My kid, not the truth.
He knew exactly what happened. He was like, she got the epidural, my brain is crushed.
I had like a really long labor. I had a 42-hour labor and I wanted to go natural. And then at like hour 36, they were like, if, you know, this could start to go really sour and like his heartbeat was dropping and stuff. And so she was like, I'm going to give you a few more hours like to just see. And then at hour 40, she was like, it's either emergency C-section or an epidural to see if we can help relax you. And so I had the epidural and he came like 2 hours later. So I felt so guilty for the last 2 hours. Cause you know, for like when you don't have, and this is no shade on anyone who gets epidural or not, it's not that, but I feel like when you don't have the epidural, you're like in it with them. You know, like they're doing some sort of suffering and birthing are too. And then when you get the epidural, like you don't know what's, you know, you just, you're like squeeze, you're okay. And you're, can have a conversation. And anyway, so I bore an old soul and he's hilarious.
This is like his eighth time here. He's like, yeah. I've been here before.
Exactly. And I feel like we spent the first few months like unfurrowing his brow. Literally. Like people would say to me, like, does he ever not make that face? Cause he always would, he has like this like quizzical look. Like, what is this place? And what am I? So I was like, no, I mean, sometimes he smiles and I had to like convince people that he was a happy baby because I knew in his heart he was just like really inquisitive of the world in a way that was just like beyond his weeks, you know, mm-hmm. what I mean? Beyond his
there weeks. Was a moment though where we were like, are you ever gonna smile?
There wasn't. but now he's like the happiest
kid. Are you
kid.
Okay?
Yeah.
Has that quizzical nature continued as he's grown?
It's definitely continued.
He is so funny because he's, oh my God, there's so many different little facets of his personality. He's like funny and like, he like jokes with us, like, you know, he'll like hint, you know, try to give you food and then like pull it away. So he's like kind of funny. He's like, but then there's moments where he's like, he just wants to read for like forever.
Yeah, I was just making dinner. Yeah, I was just making dinner and I like sat him on his chair and like, we have this new thing as of like, you know, that's the funny thing about quarantine and a month old or 1 year old, they change during the quarantine. Like the beginning of the quarantine, he was one child. He took X amount of naps. And now this far into the quarantine, we take a different number of naps. Mm-hmm. And we're just like rolling with the punches here. But so our new routine for the last like week or so is when I make dinner, I put him in his little chair and he watches like 30 minutes of Sesame Street. And he just got a guitar for his birthday. Like someone bought him a ukulele and it's so cute. Little thing.
Oh, so cute.
And you know, he just was sitting on his chair just holding his uke, like playing with the tuners and playing with it. And then all of a sudden I looked over like 10 minutes later and he wasn't watching Sesame Street. He just pulled his favorite book down. He was just like turning the page.
The chair and be like, I would like to read in this chair. And sometimes he'll stand at the front window and just like watch what's going on outside. He's like, mm-hmm. He's an old soul. But then, you know, 30 seconds later, he's fast as fuck. He's the
You get Gus. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No worries.
Yes, no problem at all.
He's the fat, like, he can walk a little bit. We practice with him, but like, he gets on his hands and knees and he's just gone. It's incredible. He's just, he's wild. He's a really rambunctious 1-year-old also.
Ah, that's awesome. I remember, it. I mean, and you're entering a phase too, where it's just going to get more. I mean, my gosh, you're just going Elliot was like that. She was super observant, like of the world around her, you know, from really, when she was really young, but it just get ready. Good times are coming. You think he's fast. Just wait till he's like,
I'm 18 months old. And, we were FaceTiming one day and she was like, oh, he's fast. Oh. Like, cool.
Great. Well, he'll keep you moving.
Yeah. Did you both always know you wanted to be mothers? Was that always something that you saw in your future? Oh,
for me, no.
No.
No. Well, when I was young, I did not want to have kids. And I think it was more or less because I would be like, I don't know. I think I was a bully. I was bullied. And I was like, I don't want to have kids. I don't want them to have to deal with this stuff that we face, I guess, as
life stuff. People. Life. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was just like, I don't know if I can handle a kid going through that. And then I never really thought about it until Steph and I got serious. And I was like, well, if I'm going to do this, like, this is the person that I want to do it with. And I didn't really want to bear the child. No, I wanted you to be the one. Well, it was funny because for what, you know, Colleen's a butcher than I am. And so,
wait, which is like pushing it a little bit. I'm like,
you wear men's clothes only. I know, but okay. Like, I
anyway, also, that's another conversation.
So she, you know, she really was like, if my parts work, like, I should do this. Like, we should do it. And then I started to think about, and now having a baby and like realizing the stress of the maternity clothes situation, like, you just think like, oh, I'll have maternity clothes. And then when you're going through it, it's just you're in the weirdest middle phase for the longest. Most of the pregnancy is the middle phase where like you don't fit in your clothes. Maternity clothes aren't quite right. And
when you have like the hairband across your button on your jeans so that it's like stretching.
Yes.
And like that was a big concern for me. I'm like, where do you find sir? Like multiple times a day.
Oh.
I was like, how am I going to wear maternity clothes? Like, how would I do this?
Well, but that's the thing, like masculine maternity clothes, that doesn't exist.
It does. And I only know that because when we were thinking about it, I had been talking to some people and we have these friends, who both moms had a baby. So, and one of them is very much like me, short hair, dresses more on the masculine side. And she actually gave me this, I think I still have it. I may have to give it back to her, but she gave me this, it's a book. It's sort of like a comic book written by, a butch lesbian who had a baby. And what was it called? It was called,
I forget.
But it was basically about her struggle with the whole of it.
Mm. Like a button-up shirt that expands for your belly. That's not easy to find.
Right. So I had that conversation with my friend and she's like, I had to like meditate on it. It was really rough for me to have my body change, but feel a certain way. And I was like, man, that's a lot. It was called Pregnant Butch. Like, that's how easy that was.
It was called Pregnant Butch. But so she, that was her situation. So she thought, she was like, if my parts work, and you'll hear, I'm sure we'll talk about her job and how her position changed in the last year. But long story long, like, she got a little bit screwed over and we were like waiting for her job position to change for her to get pregnant. And it was like a year and a half.
I was supposed to get transferred and it was like supposedly like a done deal. And it kept pushing it and pushing it and pushing it. And I was like, well, listen, like on my job, when you get pregnant, you're considered restricted and you can't do, obviously, like, can't go out on the street, but you also can't be transferred while you're restricted.
Oh.
So I was like, well, I don't want to get passed over, but I'm also older than Steph. I'm 41 now. So I was 39 at the time. And I was like, well, I don't want to get passed over. Maybe you should go first.
So that's when we started to go to the reproductive specialist. And
that was in April. We found a doctor in May. June was the let's watch it cycle. I got pregnant in July.
So you got it was pregnant like first shot.
But it was like,
wow,
it escalated quickly. Like we
escalated.
Escalated quickly.
Here's the thing. Like as a lesbian couple, like you don't necessarily need to go to the reproductive specialist, but you should just to time it out. Right.
Right. But like in April, I didn't know the process. Like I had a conversation. We had a conversation with a friend. Like I didn't know how it works. Like I didn't know, like you go to the doctor, you have to go to a therapist to make sure that you like you have to do all these things, and like so we like followed all the steps, but there's a lot of steps, and then I didn't know how it worked. I was like, I didn't know the difference between IVF and IUI, and I didn't know these all of these things, and it was like such a crash course.
But not only that,
and then I was pregnant.
We said to each other, we're like, we need to just go to the reproductive specialist, right? Because we kept talking about it. And when you're gay and there's no accidents, you just can't accidentally make a baby. So we were we gotta, if we're going to do it, let's go. Cause we're going to talk about it until we talk ourselves out of it. So we finally go and you walk in and they're like, you know, you finish up the appointment. They're like, all right, so this next cycle we're going to go. And you're like, oh my God, I'm going to you're like, no, that's so fast. Right. And then we were like, "Oh, what?"
Well, it's so interesting to me because it sounds like Colleen, that you like from the get-go, y'all were assuming you would be the one.
Yes. Well, right. So after talking about it, we were like, "All right, I'm not a fan, but I was like, if my parts work, maybe I should do it because we did want to have one biological child each."
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see. Okay, yeah. And you're older, so you were saying, yeah. Yeah.
So she was going to go first, and so we, like she said, she kept getting pushed back at this job, right. And it was a year went by. We went on this vacation in April, and we were like, okay, let's have, you know, that's where you have your serious conversations. Let's talk about life, and we were like, are we going to really wait for the NYPD to tell us when we can have kids, or like, should I do this? And she was like, well, if you're up for it. And I was like, I'm up for it. And that's how that.
And 3 months later, you were pregnant.
Boom. Boom. Wow.
And you know, it's funny, growing up, I always like pictured myself having kids. And it's like, I kind of grew up, until I was like about 7 years old, I lived in an area where like teen moms were the coolest. Like it was a lot of teen moms. And that was like the thing that you did. You just like stroller babied with your, you know, in high school. So that was what I thought was really cool. And so I always like at 15 was like, you know, I'm going to be a young mom. But then I really wanted to adopt. So I was always kind of somewhere in between, like, do I adopt or do I have a baby? And then when I realized that I was gay and I was going to be with a woman, I was like, is this a sign that I should only adopt? And so I kind of also had like a bit of guilt over getting pregnant and the idea of like making a baby when so many kids need homes. And that's like some deep ish, you know, that was like that was hard for me to sort of decide, hard for us to decide. And so then when we had this conversation in April, I kind of was like, you know, it's jump off the cliff. Like this is like, I'm in my mid 30s. You're in your late 30s. Like we want a family. And so I knew I always want kids. I just wasn't sure how. And of course, like everybody says this, it's so cliche because it's true, to quote Ryan Yorkie of If Then and other musicals. You know, it's like when you have your kid, you're like, oh, of course, this is my kid. Of course, this is how this happened. Like thank God we did this. But yeah, I was like in a sort of tumultuous middle ground for a while with it, that question.
Yeah, she really was like, sort of like an, I don't deserve to have kids because I wasn't made to have kids. Like I'm gay. Like I wasn't put on this earth to reproduce the way other people reproduce. Like it was super deep. It was wild.
That's really, yeah. That's deep. Really deep. Yeah, for that's sure. Hard.
I mean,
that is not something I ever would have like, I mean,
no, me either. You know, I would never have thought of that.
Yeah. You telling us that just now, I was like, oh my gosh, well, that makes sense. Like, I understand why you would think that way and sort of struggle with it within yourself.
Yeah. And it's funny because, so we, like I said, we got home in May. We live in a community that has a lot of lesbians and a lot of hence babies. And so we spoke to our baby making friends and we were like, what's the name of your doctor? So we went to the doctor, we found her. And when I walked into the doctor's office, end of May, I was like, oh my God, it's all straight people.
there's all freaking straight people in here. I had this like thing in my brain that like, and I know it's not true. I know plenty of straight people that use reproductive specialists, but in my brain, I was had this like, I'm a lesbian. I can't use a reproductive sketch. You're not supposed to, whatever. And then when I went in, I was like, oh my God, like it's not lesbian. Like there's a lot so of many people here in this place. Like we ran into like one lesbian couple in like the month and a half that we were going there to get, you know, whatever. So, that, yeah. And I still like struggle with that. Like I still am like, there's so many kids and maybe foster and, you know, so anyway, I didn't always know that I wanted kids. I just wasn't quite sure how it was going to happen.
But it did. And it happened very quickly.
That baby, he wanted to be.
He's meant there. To be here.
He wanted to be born.
Yes. That's what I always say. It's like, you know, and same with us. Like, I think I went off the pill and like 3 months later it happened. You know what I mean? And it's like, and we always have talked about people ask if we're going to have another one, you know, that's the inevitable question. And we're not really, we've sort almost definitively come to that
right
moment.
You always throw in that. Almost.
I know. Like, you can't say
definitely.
I know. But pretty much, yes, this is our only, I mean like, it, but we've always said like, if something happens, then it's meant to be. And we would have, you know, but we're not like actively trying to have a second child. But yeah, I had a point with that when I started. What were we talking? Oh, he wanted to
meant
be here.
To be. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. It's meant to be. Yeah.
It was. I can't imagine not having him.
Yeah.
Him specifically.
Yeah. Isn't it crazy too how like you think that people tell you all these cliches, but they're cliches because they're true. Like,
you know, like, I'm so happy to meet you. Choosing me
to be absolutely, absolutely. So then I guess the plan is then Colleen, are you, I mean, you said y'all want to have another. So are you next?
Well, so what happened was when my job was like making me wait, we decided to do an egg retrieval for me, which happened to be out of pocket. Because you have to, you know,
just so much money. Like, I'm just imagining, I'm just like, well,
the insurance covers like 6 or 8 tries at IUI, but we went straight to IVF to do the egg retrieval. So it cost money out of pocket. And then they were like, P.S., you're not getting transferred. And I was like, what?
No.
Yeah, when it was all said and done, like she could have gone in the end. But like she said, it all was meant to be.
It all happened the way it needed to happen.
But like also because, like I said, we were like so novice, we did not know what IUI or IVF, we didn't know the difference. And so when we went to the doctor, we told her our plans that we both wanted to, we were, you know, we had chosen a sperm donor. We wanted to have a, you know, half brother and sister by both of us getting pregnant with the same sperm donor. And she said, well, you know, she can do an IVF cycle while you do an IUI cycle. So basically IUI is like a medical grade turkey baster. They just like take the sperm, like squirt it in.
But they're like, we know exactly.
But they like, you do it at like the right day and hour, literally. They're like, at this hour, you come here, spread them, squirt, done. Then the IVF is like a whole other thing, right? So you have to have like shots and hormones and you harvest all of these eggs. And then when they make all the eggs come to, they go in there, they slurp them out, and then they
slurp. That's a good one.
And then they put them in a little thing and they take that same sperm donor who they, you know, medical grade turkey basted, they pop it over there. And then now we've got those guys waiting in the freezer somewhere.
So those guys, we have 7 of those guys, 7 embryos of mine ready to go. But we did that because I still wasn't sure if I wanted to do it. But in the event that I didn't, Steph can still carry the child.
Yes, using your egg then. So they would still be half siblings.
Right.
In that way. Okay, that's great.
So that's the long and short of it.
So they're just waiting in a petri dish. So
we don't want to keep them frozen too long. So we're probably going to move on that at some point soon. Although the world of coronavirus doctors, I spoke to a friend who just went and she's like, basically the waiting list is crazy because they only let like 2 people in there at once. And then they sanitize the whole office every 3 hours.
Not only that, it's just so scary. Like in the beginning, it's like, well, kids aren't getting it. And I was like, that sounds crazy. And now they're like, kids are getting it. And I'm like,
Right.
I know.
Right. Yeah. No, it's definitely, that's made us, because in the beginning, you know, you're thinking, oh, that's at least one blessing is that the kids aren't getting it. And now,
yeah,
you know, we're like, I'm going to keep her out of school till the vaccine comes. And yeah, I mean, I'm sure I'll be home because Broadway ain't coming back anytime soon. So, yeah, it's crazy. It's nuts. I just want to give you a shout out, Steph, because so backstory, I know Stephanie, I've met her because my husband, Eric, was doing Fly at La Jolla Playhouse, which is why we're still in La Jolla. Thank you, La Jolla Playhouse. not mad about it. But nope. He talks about how awesome it was when you would have Ramsey with you at rehearsal and like wearing him while you were working. And that is something I noticed when I did a show out here, that they're very familial theater. You know, some regional theaters tend to be that way and more welcoming of our children and such. But I just think it's awesome. He was saying that. He's like, it was so cool. She would be holding the baby and she was giving notes or choreographing or doing this and that. And so shout out to you, choreographer mama.
Oh, thank you. And, you know, I have to say, it's also the room that's accepting of it. Like, so Jeffrey Seller is just such a dad. He loves kids. He doesn't mind them when they coo in the corner. You know, we've all been in that position, moms, where like our child makes a sound and they're not close to him. We're just like, ah! Right. And Jeffrey is just like, sweet baby boy, like you're so, you know, and truly authentically. And so that is really a place where I lucked out, because it came from the top down that he was really accepting of Ramsey being around, in addition to the fact that my son loves music. He loves anything musical. And so, I mean, I think a lot of kids like music, so that's a thing. But, you know, sometimes when he was really young, like when he just learned to sit up, I would take him to, like, there's a yoga studio here. I would take him and put him down and like choreograph, and he would just sit in one spot and watch me dance for like 45 minutes. And so I'm lucky that he kind of like continues to let me work. I mean, sometimes, as you said, I have to wear him, but yeah, I mean, I feel super lucky that like the room was accepting of that, right? Like people are like, yes, I'll listen to your note, even though I'm staring at your child. It's like,
well, and he was so, I mean, he wasn't even a year old yet. So he was that squishy, delicious, like 9 months, 8 months, whatever. And it's like, who doesn't, if you don't want to hold or smell a baby, then you need to examine your soul, I think. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, come on, y'all. Like, it's a baby. It's not even an annoying toddler or anything. You know what I mean?
Like, it's different than having like a 3 or 4 year old running around.
Yeah. Then I can be annoyed. But like when they're 8 months and they're just so squishy and sweet. And
but the old soul that he is, I came to visit and I came by to watch the second act?
Yeah.
I came by to watch the second act.
Oh,
through the whole second act, and you know, watched the entire show.
And your husband, you know, when he has that scene where he yells at the boys.
Oh wait, your husband's the pirate. Yeah. I mean, the captain. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, he's amazing. Thanks.
So, so we were sitting right there on like house right, stage left, which is where Eric had this scene. And so he's watching so intently, and he understands the story. So when Eric like said to the boys, he's like, "But," he yelled. Ramsey just started, his whole face cracked, and he started to cry hysterically because he understood that that was bad. And then I was like, "Oh my God, that's the first time you've been scared. Like you got scared."
Oh.
Like, oh my God. Suddenly I was like, PG, this is not PG 8 months. This is like 4 and a half.
Yeah. And then
I had him watch the second act 3 more times, and by the second time he jumped, and by the third time he giggled. He was like, I know this part.
Well, that's good, because like Elliot, we only saw it once, which we loved it and we thought it was great, but there was a lot of discussion leading up to it. Elliot's almost, you know, she's 5 and a half, but there was a lot of discussion of like, remember, it's acting, and when daddy yells, you know. Right. So well done, Ramsey.
Yeah. Seriously.
The ignorance of like tiny people. Do you know what I mean? Like then sitting there. It's crazy. Yeah. It's crazy. I remember like belting things in our apartment when Elliot was about that age, and she would sleep through it. She would wasn't doing anything, but like, my God, if you crackle a little piece of paper, like a plastic bag, she would be like awake and alert. And then the fear that starts to creep in as they get older and they're more aware of the world is, you know, and then it's heartbreaking.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
Talking about like this time, ladies, it's, I mean, we know Broadway's not doing, so I'm sure Hamilton, you're not rehearsing people, you're not doing all the things, which
not
is.
Not even checking my email.
No, my God, not even checking your email. Like, oh man, that doesn't make me feel good. Like you're one of the people on the other side. You're supposed to be getting some sort of email.
No, it's like, it's funny. I see them and it's so, you know, and the other thing that's really funny is like, we're slave to our emails. And so when this whole thing went down, I was like, I'd be like, it's been 3 days since I checked my email. Like, I don't even know what's happening in, and it's when you're managing, like Hamilton grew so fast. So I always say, like, I just was doing an interview the other day and I was talking about how I went from being a dancer to like an executive manager, because all I do now is like plan castings with casting directors and this casting has to happen here and coordinate with Australia. And like, well, what time is this happening in London? And there's so little dancing involved now. Like every once in a while, like a new bar will come and like me and the associate director will like teach him the show. And I'm like, oh, me teaching the show. Like so much of it is other stuff. And, you know, I just feel like all of that stuff, all of that admin stuff is just shut down because nothing, everything is on hold. And I was I don't want to call him out, but I'm going to call him out. The production manager of the show was like, wrote an email basically saying like, I didn't see this. I'm so sorry. Now it's obvious I'm not checking my email. Like it took him like 36 hours to answer something. You know, we were all on like that 15 minute tip, but yeah. So no, nothing's happening is the answer to that. I was supposed to be choreographing something regionally also in September. That's not happening. And yeah, every last little project that I've been doing is not happening. So I'm just like working with like creating creative teams and like writing stuff that I've wanted to create, like working on new musicals. Because why not?
But Colleen, clearly you're still working, correct? Yeah. How has that been? I know Jessica and I are both, you know, we're both in two performer relationships. Our husbands are both in the industry. So none of us are working right now. There's like this, we're in this abyss, which has its own struggles. Yes, for sure.
It's not hashtag fun employment.
No. But I also feel for people who are in a couple where both people are still working or are in a couple where one person is working and the other person is not, because then the balance of home life and work life becomes very unbalanced, I guess is what I should say. So how are you guys forging through that? What is your work like right now?
So I am not on the street anymore. So even though I was waiting for that transfer to happen, and I got passed over, I actually got transferred to a brand new unit that was kind of more my speed, because I wanted to go to the police academy to be an instructor, but I wanted to try to weasel in, you know, yoga because I think that people need it. And they were like, no. And so then the health and wellness unit started. And I had myself and this other woman who was a lieutenant at the time, we started a NYPD sports. NYPD has sports teams. Like we have baseball, football. There's a lot of competitive teams, but then you also have like an aerobics team and like action shooting where they shoot target. It doesn't matter. There's like 30 teams. There's volleyball, lacrosse, cricket, rugby,
seven types of soccer. we were like, let's try to start a yoga program where it's just like a karma project. You know, we teach the yoga, you take it. Hopefully everybody wins. That was the whole idea. So we started this sports team, which is totally recreational. And then the health and wellness section so I guess they were looking for people, and I applied and I got in, and now I literally teach cops yoga. So I'm still doing what I'm doing. And there was a moment where I was like, I'm going to get kicked back out onto the street and I have to go back into people's homes. And I'm not about it. But my unit is really the one unit that is providing like mental health services. Now it's been like 10 weeks already.
We
started the same week. So I've just been teaching live classes on Saturdays. I'm like a health and fitness coordinator. So I'm also organizing events. And I had this huge event that I wanted, like a family day, a family fitness day. And that got, you know, kiboshed because it was supposed to be in a New York City park. There's no park permits, nothing's happening. So I decided to go virtual with it. So we're going to do like a Zoom fitness festival with all of the sports teams to showcase what they're doing, because a lot of people don't know about them. So I'm still planning that, and we ended up not going back out. There's only like 5 cops in my unit; the rest are supervisors. So we didn't go back out onto the street.
Well, I was gonna say, because I heard so many. I mean, so many police officers. Because I, even though I'm in La Jolla, I watch Cuomo every day. So I when he speaks, so I want to keep up on what's happening in my city. And I knew like so many police officers were coming down with the virus. And so, and yeah. So they were calling people back to say like, you need to go on patrol or you need to do this. Mm-hmm. So yeah. That's really, I mean, it's lucky that you're not, I mean, so are you not going in at all? So everything's virtual for you?
No. I'm going in.
You're going.
I'm still planning my events. I'm teaching classes. We're doing a lot of work within the unit to get resources out to people. Our school safety agents, school safety division and traffic enforcement, they took a lot. They had a large number of deaths from COVID. So, you know, we're trying to reach, you know, all of these people who are going to, you know, think about that. School is out. These school safety agents still have to go to work, and just find a way to kind of deal with their peers, you know, passing away. So that's the one really great thing about my unit. We have a psychologist. We're in the process of trying to hire more psychologists, and kind of just we want to get rid of that stigma about getting help, you know.
No, I think that's wonderful, because I mean, you know, literally, like I said at the beginning of this, when I heard NYPD and yoga, it was like, what? That's like an oxymoron. Like those things don't go together, you know, but it's so, but that's a preconceived notion that I need to do away with. That's old fashioned thinking.
And I was that person. I did not like the yoga when I started, and it made me mad. It made me really mad. And I was a basketball player, couldn't touch my toes, but I had this ego, this competitive kind of side to me that like you threw me in a yoga class, and I'm like looking at the person next to me and I'm like, your son's awake. I could do that.
Oh, no.
Maybe I'll lay back down.
So I was like, I can do that. And then I was like, you can't do that. You need to chill out. But then I realized that I started going back. I had a friend that just kept forcing me to go. And then I had a crush on my teacher. This is pre-Steph. And I was like, she does a lot of cool stuff. I'm going to keep going to that class.
Has nothing to do with, you know.
Right, exactly.
Totally. Let me go put this job actually.
All right.
So now you're home with Ramsey all the time without your outlet of work in its, you know, normal form, and the full responsibility without help, I'm assuming. How has that been for you?
It has been, for the first couple of weeks, I was like, I love this. And I loved the alone time, and I loved And I still love the time alone with him because I would have obviously never had this much time with him otherwise. But it has been really hard. Like, it is so difficult. You know, I just keep thinking about all the mommies. The no help thing is like, my mom's like, I wish I could just come and watch him for an hour. Or like, some of, like, you know, I keep saying there's two experiences of quarantine. There's I have a little kid and I'm a regular person, because people are like, I've never been so productive, or like, I'm not productive this week, but I clean up. And like, don't, you can never ever say again that your dreams can't come true because now you've had COVID quarantine. And I'm just like, literally, I have never been busier in my fucking life.
Same, like, girl. Same.
You are, we hear you. Still clear.
Like, so, like, my neighbor across, someone was like, you know, or like, I have like friends, like three people this week were like, you know, like, read a book or something. I'm like,
yeah.
Are you kidding me right now? And like, you see, my kid's been sleeping. He fell asleep when we started this interview. He's already awake. He's not a sleeper. He doesn't really like sleeping without us. Like, he's, like, my kid doesn't sleep, and he, when he naps, I have to be walking him in the stroller. So like, I'm literally on my, I can't stand still and rock it and check my email. I'm literally that woman walking down the street staring at my phone because I can't, speaking of emails, check my email unless we're walking. And it's just like, this experience has been crazy, because then she comes home and she's like, you know, like, Instagram is like, has been a little bit of like a hotspot for us, because I'm like, I don't have the luxury of like taking a shower that's longer than 2 minutes long or looking at Instagram, because like, you have your car ride where you can just like zone out and think for an hour when you drive to the city. I don't have an hour to think during the day. I don't have 20 minutes. Cause like, you know, with the 1-year-old, I mean, with, I don't know how older kids are, and I can only imagine,
but it's not like, much better at this point. They're not that old.
Yeah, they have different needs, but it's right. Still the same level of busy.
Right. Where your brain is engaged with them. Like, even today we went on a walk, and like, her and a friend of ours that we like do a little social distance walk with, because we thankfully are live in a place where you can take walks. Sometimes I look at people that are like, I left the house once this week. I'm like, oh my God, I can't even imagine. But they both said something about like, I don't remember, we were talking about doing some activity. I remember it was like a yoga or something. And they're like, you can, oh, I know what it was. It was talking about reading a book. This was the Thursday, the camel that broke the straw. What? Anyway, they were talking about like, you can read an audiobook. You can just put a pot in when you're with him. And I was like, oh, so while I'm listening to the words of the thing and not talking to my son or engaging with him because I'm focused, he's not going to notice, or he's not going to like talk to me. So then I have to stop it. And I'm just like, you don't get it. You don't get it. You don't spend all day alone with a kid. You literally don't understand.
Nope.
Yeah.
And so we are living in that reality of living in two such wildly different realities. Yeah. That it is, I don't understand her difficulty of going out in the world, especially at the beginning when it was like, you know, love NAFTA. Right. Like, I went into a building for the first time this week when I was like, let me do the grocery shopping this week. I need a minute. And so her fear of that, and she, you know, was like, I don't really understand necessarily how tired you are when you say like, you, I come home at the end of the day and like, you know, you're exhausted. But that has been really an interesting thing and hard, and really a great practice in communication, because we are just like, I am too angry about this, and I'm going to say it so that you know it.
You know? Right. Because it breeds resentment. I mean, it does, yeah. It's not healthy, you know, and we're all trying to figure out how to get through. Even when you're, I mean, fuck, Eric's home with me all the time too, but I'm still exhausted because mom, do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's like, he's like laying in the hammock for like, you know, 45 minutes.
That, yeah, I totally. That is, and it's funny because like, I speak to friends of mine who, you know, there is, it is, yeah, you just become, when you're that primary parent, you just, like, perfect example, we went on a walk, we came over from the walk, we were gonna do stuff outside, and I was gonna put together a planter, and she was gonna clean the shed, and it's like, all of a sudden, she's in boots, and I'm like, well, he's gotta, he needs a diaper change, and he's gotta eat, and she's like, well, just do that, and then join me outside, and I was like, great, okay, good, no problem at all, and it's like, you know, if lesbian or not, that's what happens. You're that mommy, yeah. And suddenly it's, you know, and I know every couple goes through it, and like, you speak to every couple and they're like, yep. And in so many ways, like, you share so much responsibility. And then in so many ways, it's like each parent sort of like assumes their role.
Yeah. It's the mental load. I mean, we talk about this a lot. It's the mental load. It's exhausting. I mean, right now is I go to bed by like 9:30 these days. Mm-hmm. Like I am exhausted. And I said to Eric the other day, I was like, why am I so tired? Like I'm getting 8 hours of sleep because my child, she sleeps, but I was like, I'm getting 8 hours of sleep. I said, why am I so tired? But it's like the, also having to be like, all good.
Mm-hmm.
All and there's good. Also, yeah. I mean, my husband and I were actually just talking about this tonight, this, and it's something that he has come to understand in a new way because he's worked the entire time we've had kids. And I took time off from being in a show, then went back to a show after I had my first kid. Then after my second, it was a much longer break. And I really, really struggled with like the being stay at home mom situation. And he said, you know, I get it. It's like you never stop moving. You're busier than you've ever been, but there's nothing igniting your passion. Yes, you're passionate about taking care of your kid, but you're not feeding yourself in this other way. There's like, he's had like these projects that he's been working on. He's like, I haven't had a project for a week and I'm losing it. And I said, I know that's what being a stay-at-home parent is like a lot of the time, you know? So it's like, it's really, I think probably a lot of families are going through this shift of understanding, hopefully, if they're communicating, you know, what it's like. But I'm trying to think of, there's like a meme or something articulate just because you're, it's about the exhaustion of motherhood that you can be totally exhausted by not being inspired by something. And I think that for me, that right now that hits it on the head. It's like finding this way to kind of light the fire within. And the podcast is actually the thing that does it right now. So that's, I'm thankful that we're able to still do it in this way. But I feel you so hard when you talk about that, the moment that you're in right now. And and quarantined with the age of a child that you have is really intense.
And yeah. It's funny because I feel the other thing I like to do on Instagram is be very honest, because I also feel like if you don't say something like I'm so grateful, and I am, you can be frustrated and grateful at the same time. And it's like, it's so funny because people just want you to feel like, well, it must be so. Don't meet a mom during the quarantine or anytime, actually. This is a question, a statement I resented so much at the beginning because I had no babies around me. I didn't grow up with babies. So I didn't know what the heck I was getting into when I had a baby. And he came out and I was like, what do you mean he's going to feed all day and I'm going to sleep for 20 minutes at a time? I don't understand. Like, I had a hard time with that. And so when people would say things, isn't it the best? I'm like, not yet. Not the best. Just isn't it the best? Well, it's very amazing. And it's also ridiculous. It's a ridiculous thing that's happening to me right now. So
I like that.
When you say something like, isn't it the best? That's really limiting my breadth of experience. And so like right now in the quarantine, when people are like, well, it just is so great that you're getting this. I'm like, it is. It is so great. And that does not negate all the other things that it also is, which is I can't read a book. I can't choreograph a dance. I can't take a dance class without wearing him for 45 minutes of the, and also he's amazing. And so I can take a dance, right? So it is all of these feelings that are allowing us to have this very full experience, I think, of life, where I feel like we're feeling these troughs in addition to these, you know, highs. And because there's nothing to sort of separate those things, we're just like, whoa, we're in like this nonstop cycle of that, which has been really so in such an incredible way to take a look at ourselves and what it is that we're spending our time doing, for me personally. Mm-hmm. And having him is the reason that I can do that, because I get to go, when I have 20 minutes free, I get to go, what exactly do I want to do with that 20 minutes? Because I
have to be so specific.
So yeah. And it is incredible and difficult.
Yeah.
As you both know.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, hi, buddy. I've never seen these people before. What's happening?
Hi, Ramsey.
He's also, and as many breastfeeding mommies, he's waving. Perfect.
Thanks for the wave, bud.
breastfeeding mommies know at nighttime, he's unfortunately, Colleen has a really hard time with, because he doesn't.
Yeah, he don't want me.
He doesn't right. do it. He's like, give me like, the boob, please.
You, Stephanie, are the founder of an incredible non-for-profit called Katie's Art Project. Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
I started this organization in honor of her, of my best friend, Katie. She fought leukemia, but she got it when we were seniors in high school. And 2 years later, she passed away. And the experience that I had with her in the hospital, the volunteers, was although volunteers are great, sometimes they would come in and it would feel like a little bit of a fishbowl, and their experience, it would be like, oh my gosh, you did a good thing. And the kids felt a little like not seen. So I wanted to start an organization where I connected these great artists that I worked with on Broadway with kids facing these life-threatening and terminal illnesses to create art, whether it was write a song together or make a piece of art. So many things now that they've done, costume design, photography. And I basically said, Luis Aldado and I had a conversation. He was like, you can do this. You can start this organization. And here are certain ways. And he basically like helped me. He had just started Revolution Latina, and he helped me start the organization. And now we are in our, I don't even know what year, I guess, obviously, because it's obviously too late for me to answer that question. we release songs on iTunes, and we connect kids and make art and do art galleries. And it is, every time an art project happens, I'm so surprised. Like, I think I know how awesome it's going to be. And then the artist and the kid get together, and it's so magical and beautiful. And we have, we have this unique experience of sometimes being like one of the last things that the kids do, and we capture their voice always in these songs. And it is so beyond when these parents who have watched their child struggle and they see their kid smile, and then they hear this song and hear their voice or see this piece of art that they can keep forever. It's like, it's so much bigger than me or any of these people that are doing this project. It's such an incredible thing. I'm always so grateful that we caught these kids when we did. And we got to hear what they had to say, because they're, as you can imagine, they're so much more insightful than so many of us. What they see is so much bigger than them. So I started that organization, and now we're doing all of this online programming. And I realized before, I'm like, why weren't we always doing this? You know, the kids are quarantined a lot. Like, they're in sterile hospital rooms. They can't see people. It happens all the time. So we're going to continue this program that we started, which is called Staying Home with Cat, Katie's Art Project. And we do programming 2 days a week, where we release like an IGTV tutorial. And then we do a live on Fridays where they can talk to the artist. And then we do this thing called Crafty Sundays, where we just have people who, like, maybe you're like, I want to help Katie's Art Project, but I'm actually not an artist, but I can do crafts. So they help create a craft, and which is great for the quarantine now, because we all need crafts, right? Anybody with kids needs crafts.
Oh, yeah. Constant crafts.
Yes, definitely. Constant
crafts. The amount of money I've spent at Michael's Arts and Crafts. Over the last 5.5 years.
I'm so inspired by what you're doing, which kind of leads us to our wrap up. During this time, we've been asking everybody a question, a different one. And we're wondering for both of you, and I think we probably have touched on it, but what has been the most fulfilling thing that you have done not during this time specifically, but, you know, in your life?
Oh my goodness. That is,
it's deep.
So deep. And you know, it's cliche because it's true. I love being this kid's mom. Mm-hmm. I love it. And I know I talked before about the difficulties of it, because it's hard. Anything that's worth it is hard. We know that in our industry. And you know, we pretend like that's not the case when you have a child, but it is. It's the best thing ever. I'm like, do I ever need to? And I'm also in that phase.
Oh, there he is. Yes.
Mom, how fast it is, kids.
Back to the mom with the boobs. Back to the mom with the boobs. I'm like, do I need to ever go do anything else? You know, it's the best thing that's ever happened. You know, there's really close seconds, like, you know, performing like at like, you know, there's close seconds, but nothing holds a candle to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about you, Dave?
Same calling.
For the kid. I was like, oh, I wasn't even thinking of that.
That is a mom truth right there. You know what I mean?
I'm like, oh, yeah, you're right. No, he's pretty amazing. And I think talking about, ow, I love getting slapped in the face by him at 7 a.m. My favorite thing is the 2-finger pinch to the throat in the morning.
Wake up, mom.
Yeah. No, but that's absolutely true. And I was thinking of like personal accomplishments, I guess. And
yeah.
Valid. What were you going to say?
Yeah.
I was just going to say like getting my yoga certification was probably one of the best experiences of my life. Yeah, I learned a lot about myself and I'm able to use it practically now, 8 years later. So that's pretty great.
Yeah, that's awesome. You're able to use it, you know, and to make an impact in an organization, I think, that needs that, you know, that needs that support, sort of the mental, meditative, yogic.
Breath. And I think also because I never wanted to be a cop, really. It was kind of just something that, like, I was like, I need a job. I probably should go to the dentist. I don't have this. It was one of those kind of things. So I think to have found something finally, you know, 15 years into my career, that is exactly what I kind of wanted to be doing. I'm not picking my nose. I have a nose ring. Now has seen it and I think he moved it before. So yeah, to find like a niche, you know, in the department and be doing something that I really enjoy in a career that I did not think was for me is pretty cool.
That's awesome.
That really cool.
You guys, we've loved this conversation. I'm sorry that Ramsey's already awake.
I know. Thank you. I mean, I feel like you spent like your, you know, 45 minutes of your alone time with us and I feel guilty about it.
Don't feel guilty.
This is happy to talk to you guys and thank you so much. We're happy to chat with you. Thanks for thinking of us.
Of course. Thanks for kicking us off for Pride Month. Thank you for telling your story and sharing it.
No, Pride is canceled, but Pride isn't canceled.
No. Nope, for real.
Yeah. We're going to try to put this little man back to bed.
Okay.
Bye. See you.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Mama's Talkin' Loud. Special shout outs to Rachel Spencer Hewitt for our fabulous graphic, Kristen Anderson Lopez, Bobby Lopez, and Justin Ward Weber for our awesome theme song, our producers Dori Berenstein, Alan Seals, and of course, the Broadway Podcast Network for bringing us to you.
If you like what you're hearing and you want to keep the conversation going, you can follow us on Instagram and Facebook, and of course, subscribe and review us wherever you listen to your podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.